Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we're focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everybody, welcome back to Drive On. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and today my guest is Mike Connor. Mike is a former NCO in the 75th Ranger Regiment. He's a veteran who specializes in understanding the obstacles military personnel face when they're leaving the service. And his last position was a platoon sergeant for the Warrior Transition Unit at Walter Reed Medical Center. And he understands the strain that military personnel have when they're re-entering into civilian life. So welcome to the show, Mike. Really glad to have you here.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet. I know we told a little bit about your background, but for folks who maybe aren't familiar with you, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and kind of how you got into what you're doing now?
Sure. So I came in the Army in 1994. Well, I knew what I wanted to do all the way through high school. So I was in JROTC in high school. And we used to go up to, at the time, Fort Lewis, and we saw the Rangers up 2nd Ranger Battalion fast roping off the tower. And I was like, and probably my junior year in high school, I was like, that's what I want to do. So I joined the Army in 94, went to the recruiter and they said, oh, we can't get you in the Rangers, but we can get you to airborne school. So I was like, oh, that's great. So I went to airborne school and went to volunteer for the Rangers. And they said, well, the liaison is on leave. So you're going to have to go on. We have you on orders. So they had me on orders to 25th Light in Hawaii. So I went on 30 days leave prior and in Oregon, because that's where I'm originally from. And I ended up getting a wild hair and having my dad drive me up to Lewis. And I walked into 2nd Bat. I remember, and I went to the staff duty NCO and I said, I'd like to volunteer for the unit. And they're, wait a minute. So they went up to the PAC office and they came down and it was at the, Sergeant Major Balog, but at the time it was Sergeant First Class Balog. He was the PAC NCOIC for 275. And he was like, can we even do this? So so what they did is they were like, okay, all right, can you take a PT test right now? I was like, sure. So I go in the car, I grab some clothes, and one of the staff duty guys gave me a PT test. And then they cut me orders to report to Fort Lewis. And then from there, I was supposed to go to RIP. But when I got there, 2nd Bat was in Panama, and they got tied up with the, there's a mission that it got tied up with when, and Cubans were down there, and they end up having to raid a compound with the, had to do with the whole Cuban, it was Operation Safe Haven. Mm-hmm. It was 94, 95. And so, nobody was there to pick me up. So I sat at the, replacement battalion intake battalion there at Fort Lewis for like 3 weeks. And then finally they just cut me orders down to 7th ID. And I'm like, I'm not supposed to be here. There was a, yeah, whatever. So they threw me in a line squad at 3rd battalion, a Charlie Company, Manchus, which is a 3-7, they formerly Fort Ord, and ended up, putting me in that unit in Charlie Company. And then like 3 weeks later, we deployed to Panama. So I ended up going to Panama with them. And then when I came back, I was like, my squad leader, I kept telling him, I'm not supposed to be here. I'm supposed to be going to RIP. And finally, when I got back, they cut me orders to go to RIP. And then I went to RIP, made it through RIP. And then was that 2nd Bat. Spent 2nd Bat from 95 till 2000. Then I went to go be a Ranger school instructor for the mountain phase from 2000 till just after the towers fell. A few months, I went back to ROPE. Range orientation program. These are all before. Now they have RASP 1, RASP 2, but they used to have RIP and ROPE. So I went through ROPE. I went back to 2nd Ranger Battalion, the same company and platoon I left from. Took a squad there as a squad leader. We went to Afghanistan a couple times. Then I got promoted. Then I went to go to regimental headquarters to be a RIP instructor for a couple years. Then I went up to USASOC after that for with U.S. Army Special Operations Command for and served for 3 years on a team called Sourcey, which is Special Operations Research Support Element, kind of a high speed force mod stuff. And okay. And then after that, I got a conscience and I was like, I got to go back and lead troops again. So I went to Charlie, at the time it was Charlie 3-8 long range surveillance at Joint Base Lewis McChord. And it was a detachment sergeant there. And then right about then I was about there for 3 years and then ended up going and getting an assignment at Walter Reed, and which was my most challenging assignment, working with the Wounded Warriors at Walter Reed, and ended up retiring out of there. So after that, that's a good intro. I can go into the rest later.
Yeah. National security experts are warning our aging power grid is more vulnerable than ever. January marked the third time a power station in North Carolina was damaged by gunfire recently. Authorities are saying the attack raises a new level of threat. Authorities are now checking our grid for vulnerabilities, and they've identified 9 key substations. If these substations are attacked, power could be knocked out from coast to coast for up to 18 months. Imagine a blackout lasting not days, but weeks or months. Your life would be frozen in time right at the moment the power fails. Lights all over the country would go out, throwing people into total darkness. That's why having your own solar power is more important than ever. With the Patriot Power Generator, you get a solar generator that doesn't install into your house. Because it's portable, you can take it with you and even use it inside. But it's powerful enough for your phones, your medical devices, or even your fridge. And right now you can go to 4patriots.com and use the code DRIVEON to get 10% off your first purchase on anything in the store, including the Patriot Power Generator. You'll also get their famous guarantee for an entire year after your order, plus free shipping on orders over $97. And a portion of every sale is donated to charities who support our veterans and their families. So just go to 4patriots.com and use the code DRIVEON to get 10% off. That's 4patriots.com. Use code DRIVEON to get yours today. Yeah. No, that actually was really good. I liked the fact that you don't take no for an answer, really. You just kind of knocked on the door and was like, hey, I'm here. I want to volunteer, and I'm not going to just walk away and be like, oh, okay, no is a good enough answer for me. So it's kind of cool, kind of hearing your story and how you got to where you are. Really, to me, it's a unique story. I never really heard of anyone who just kind of showed up at, another unit and was like, hey, I want to volunteer for this. And how do I get in? What do I do? All that kind of stuff, which is cool, because it just kind of shows the attitude that you have. It probably shows a little bit about your background and your, determination and, perseverance, willingness to, think outside the box to accomplish an objective. Right. And I'm pretty sure Rangers appreciated that type of mindset and that type of attitude as well, which is probably why they didn't just slam the door in your face and tell you to get lost,
Right. Yeah.
So you mentioned your time at Walter Reed was one of the more challenging times. What was that time like, and what was challenging about all of that?
So at Walter Reed, at the Warrior Transition Battalion or Brigade at Walter Reed, we were dealing with the most injured. And I had in my platoon, I had a few of the severely injured. I had some, very, very, some great influential people too, Medal of Honor recipient. But they were some of the worst of the wounded came to Walter Reed, and dealing with them on a daily basis was an honor, mm-hmm. by far. But it also taught me a lot about myself more than anything, humbleness, humility, it brings the reality of war, of what, the consequences. Everybody sees the glory and the hugs and high fives and stuff, but a lot of people don't see the aftermath of how war is, devastating. And there's a lot more amputees this war, I believe. I don't remember the percentages off my, but the interesting part about that was, had to do with our education of medical education on the battlefield was much better now, and more people are surviving to make it to that point. And that's one of the reasons that the injury rate was a lot higher, because there's not as many deaths. You know, we're beginning, which was great, because more individuals at a level of, you know, a squad level are trained to, you know, to take care of trauma mm-hmm. on a satisfactory level to be able to survive, you know, stop the bleeding, get them to the surgeon. So
that's right. That's right. Yeah. And that's an incredible advancement that we've made, because I know even as a, you know, an infantryman, when I deployed to Afghanistan, this was 2010, you know, the amount of medical training that we went through, and it was not just me, it was, you know, a whole bunch of us. So it wasn't like we had to rely on the medic if something happened. Like we could handle things, maybe not to the same degree that the medic could do, but mm-hmm. we could stop the bleeding if something happened, right? Or, you know, someone has a collapsed lung, like we knew what to do to kind of handle those types of situations.
Yeah.
Temporarily, you know, we weren't going to be the ones going in and reconstructing things and figuring everything out. We would be able to stabilize a person though, until they got to the point where they can be in, you know, the right hands as far as the medical, side thing, of things go. Yeah. But you're right. Like, you know, people, you know, even like, you know, Vietnam era and stuff like that, they didn't have that level of training, but they also didn't have the level of protection either, as far as the body armor goes and all of that. They had, you know, next to nothing. They might have had like a flak jacket, but that wasn't gonna help.
No, it stops nothing. Yeah.
With too much, you know, like maybe a little you know, glancing blow with a shrapnel or something like that.
Yeah.
It might help with that, but it's really not gonna help too much with the direct impact or even explosion, you know, from a grenade or something like that. It's not gonna do too much, you know, if it's that close, right? And so, yeah, those people just wouldn't have made it. And so they wouldn't have made it to that point where they had the option of being amputated to save their life, right? And that's where you're talking about there. While it may sound terrible that, yeah, there's more, you know, amputees or there's more injuries, at least these people are coming home alive with a pulse, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's unfortunate, I think.
Yeah.
You know, but then there's that flip side of it is now these people have to learn how to live. Maybe with lost limbs, lost eyesight, you know, decreased mobility, and they have other issues now. And I got to imagine, you know, from your point of view, seeing these people come through probably took a toll on you, didn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. This is one thing that they were very, the whole organization was very smart on taking care of yourself as a caregiver. So basically, because you are, even though you're in a leadership position, a squad leader, platoon sergeants, there's, you know, the whole company structure, you are, you're still a caregiver and part of, you're part of a, you know, you're part of the team, you know, you're pretty much your squad leader, your platoon sergeant, then your social worker, your nurse case manager, all the whole shebang. And they made sure that, they would bring in acupuncture for, like weekly. This is some, you know, they would do stuff for the individuals like us, because it does, they have something called compassion fatigue that you're probably familiar with that. It sets in. It's when you deal with people that are injured for so long, or you're dealing with people that are injured, you start to lose, you know, you're like, oh, that guy's only missing one leg. Yeah. This guy's missing two. So you start seeing them on a weird level. So you have to be careful with that. So
sure. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's definitely not a place that you want to slip into, especially, you know, not in front of those people. I mean, in the back of your head, everyone has, you know, these other kind of thoughts that maybe aren't socially acceptable to get out there and start talking about. Right. But, you know, it's you know, just a thing that we have to deal with. And it seems like they were good about that and provided you with some, you know, some outlets to be able to, kind of cope with some of that and help out. So you got out of, you retired from there. You got out of the military. How was that transition like for you as you were getting out?
So I guess the best way to put it is the longer you're in, the more institutionalized you become.
Right.
So, and it's the more difficult it is, the transition is, even though you think it is, you think, oh man, I've been 20 years. Everybody thinks the guy's been, he's squared away. He's going to be able to get his stuff together, but it's a challenge. So, I don't know. I hate quoting statistics, but I just met actually last week with the Helmets of Hard Hats reps, and I think it was around, I think it's 80 to 85%. I'm sure somebody will fact check me on that, but 80-85% of people, when they get out of the military, change their plan from the original plan they had when they when they ETS'd or retired. So the challenge was to, I thought I knew what I wanted to do, so I end up working with my brother-in-law as a project manager, and it didn't work out too well for me because it just wasn't what I felt was right. And then I looked into like nursing. I looked into a lot of different paths. So I was going to go overseas, do security contracting. And my wife was like, no. And so one day, and I ended up taking college classes. So, using the post 9/11 GI Bill. And that really wasn't for me either. And I remember I was in the middle of taking class and I looked up and there was an advertisement for a deep sea commercial diver. Hmm. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to pick up the phone call. So I call. Month later, I'm enrolled up in New Jersey of Divers Academy International, which doesn't exist anymore because my organization actually bought the school.
Oh, okay.
So we run a, I'll talk about that later, but we run a commercial diving school now. But so I ended up going there for 4 months, putting my life on pause for about 4 months, going to getting my commercial diver certification for deep sea diver, hard hat diver, underwater welding, and those kinds of things. Even though it's just all familiarization there, pretty much it's a school. $30,000 for how to blow bubbles underwater. But after that, I didn't know. So I was contacted by the Pile Drivers and Divers Union and went that path and worked as a, went through an apprenticeship for 4 years as a pile driver and then mapped my way into what I'm doing now. On the union side, supporting the men and women of the organization.
Yeah. Now, so you also are basically offering advice to current or former military members going through this transition stage, right? And so you've been there, you've gone through this stage yourself, and you were maybe part of that statistic that you quoted, even if the numbers aren't 100% accurate. There's a good percentage of people, let's just say, that change your plan after leaving the military. And I think there's another statistic, and I'm not going to get the numbers right 100% because this is just off the top of my head. But I think it's somewhere between like 1 and 2 years that a service member lasts or a veteran lasts after leaving the military in their first job. And then they move to some other job. I don't know necessarily if it's in a totally different career field, if they tried this one field and they're like, no, that's not for me. And then they move on to something else. Or if it's, just changing jobs at a different company or whatever, yeah. But I know it's somewhere around 1 to 2 years, that most veterans last after leaving the military in their first job, which kind of goes along the lines of what you're saying, right?
Yeah, no, I think one of the things that is, I think we leave the military with, and some people might disagree, but we leave the military with an inflated sense of self-worth.
Sure.
We think that we're, and my best advice to anybody is take a big bite of a humble sandwich. And like I tell our veterans that we bring through our program, and I did the same thing. I was like, if you are as good as you think you are, then you will rise to the top, but everybody wants that $100,000 a year right out the gate, I mean, shoot, if you work the intel side, I mean, yeah, that probably is a reality.
That's probably easier to get. Right. That.
the individuals, especially from the combat arms, field infantry, field artillery, armor, there's not a lot to equates to what we do on the outside. Sure. And that's why I got into the trades, because I think it's one of the best kept secrets in America.
Mm-hmm.
Spot where you can make six digits with no college debt, so
that's right. And that's something that I think a lot of people overlook. I don't know what it is, if it's a just this old school mentality that it's not good work, or it's that it's not going to pay well, you're not going to be able to afford a home or, you know, raise a family on a salary doing something in the trades, where, you know, I see people, you know, just that I know from our neighborhood here, and, you know, whether it's electricians or plumbers or, you name it, they're making loads of money. And they're doing just fine. They own their home. They have 2-3 kids, you know, whatever. It's like they're living the American dream, and they have no debt as far as college goes. And they're able to, work their job, a job that they enjoy, and they can make a good living doing that. And so it's like, yeah, why wouldn't more people look into that, you know?
Yeah. Plus, you're earning a benefits package. So you're earning a pension. Yeah. Yeah. So like I retired with a military pension. I'm working on a second pension also. So, pensions are kind of going away too in America. It's one of those things that's good, because who wants to work till they're 80, you know?
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. At some point you need to enjoy life, you know, and not saying that you may not enjoy the work that you do. You might, but there's more to life than work. There's family, there's a whole world to see. And, you know, like some people might want to go travel and see the world the country or even just explore their backyard, you know, like their areas in their state or nearby within driving distance. They may not have had the opportunity because they've been, you know, chained to a desk for the last 40 years or whatever, you know. that's not the best way to go. So, what are some of the challenges that you see when you're kind of mentoring some people as they're transitioning out of the military? What are some of the challenges that you see other people having?
Well, the big challenge is especially somebody that has never been in the real market. Mm-hmm. So like somebody that's come in when they're 18 in the ETS. So they have never really, they went from their family to getting thrown to the wolves, and they've had a mama and a dad the whole time. It's just they transitioned. Mom and dad was the military.
Yep.
And now you're on your own. And the first reality check that you're going to have in the civilian world is that everybody's from themselves. So, and that's the biggest thing is everybody. It's a shock, isn't it? You know, that was the biggest shock for me. It was like everybody, it was acceptable to look out for number one. Mm-hmm. And screw everybody else. And that was socially acceptable. And that was a big shock for me. Like, sure. Oh, my time, and I'm going home. And I stayed till like the work was finished, you know, and I was like, people had to tell me to go home. And that's a big culture shock, you know, because us from the military, we're used to working as a team. When another person's down, we pick them up, we pick up the slack, you know, we watch each other's back, and that's what we're used to. Now, that's number one, challenge number one. Challenge number two is dealing with that first layoff, because it'll happen. Because, it's that's a huge challenge. So making sure that you're financially secure enough to deal with a layoff. And then also using all the assets that you have at your disposal to be able to make it through. That's one of the reasons that I went with a union and working in the trades, is that what I do now, but my rep, my business agent, make sure I stayed employed. Mm-hmm. And this day and age, right now is the time to do it, because right now we have the workforce is aging. So I think it's like between 40 and 50 years old in the trades. And right now, if you want to be successful and make big money, getting in the trades right now, especially from the military, is definitely a way to go. You can make a lot of money. And if you, the show up to work on, we already have the struggle, because I recruit people all the time from different communities. And the hard part what we have is guy or girl show up on time, work hard, and then have a good attitude. I mean, if you have those three, you go right to the top, to the top. I guarantee you go right to the top.
Yeah. I mean, like just showing up is such a huge thing, I think, these days. I mean, you see, I don't care what the business is, you see help wanted signs outside the windows all the time.
Yep.
People looking for just people who want to work. And when they get people to work, very often you go into some of these places, whether it's a restaurant or grocery store, whatever it is, sometimes it's just the crappiest of attitudes that you're dealing with. Right. And it's like, I don't want to go shop there or, spend my time there if I'm getting crappy service from people. And I got to imagine it's the same thing across any industry, you know, even in the, the trades, you know, you don't want somebody who's show up to work and they're dragging ass and they're just not motivating to be around. And, you know, that brings the morale down of everybody, you know, when you have that kind of, I don't know, crappy negative personality going on. Right.
Yeah.
So
another good thing with the trades, and it made it an easy transition as to alleviate the difficulty of transitioning out the military. It's very, carpenters and pile drivers. I mean, pile drivers, basically was my trade, and basically a pile driver is a steel carpenter, I guess the best way to put it.
Sure.
And instead of wood, you're using steel, you're using a lot of welding and stuff like that. But the construction trades is very much like the military. So it's an easy transition, especially for an 11 Bravo infantryman to come straight across. It's an easy transition, you know, because you're still living a structured life within construction, and you know, it makes it a lot.
Now I know a lot of times people coming out of the military, especially, you know, the folks that were that you were dealing with in your last post, you know, there's medical issues, there's you know, maybe physical limitations, especially in you know, some of the trades, very physically demanding. You know, are there any you know, opportunities in those areas for people who maybe are you know, they got knees or back or, you know, hips or whatever issues that they may have, you know, any opportunities for them in those areas that maybe they can work around that?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's what you can tolerate. So it's, I mean, I'm, you know, I have back knee issues. I was on jump status for many, many years. I mean that we all do. Plus I'm, you know, 47. So that in my age, you know, didn't help all that much, but, it's basically what you can handle. And you'll find out that it is not as difficult as what we were used to putting up with, you know.
Sure.
Like you're like, oh, we gotta do this for 8 hours, 10 hours, you know. And it's I don't gotta set up a patrol base and sleep tonight out here.
Right.
So you know, I remember my, you know, people are like, oh, I'm wet, I'm going home. I'm like, you're wet? Like big deal.
Yeah,
but, you know,
like that's, you're supposed to be wet. It's raining like that.
Raining. Like if it ain't raining, we ain't training. Right.
So. Right. Exactly. Exactly. Just like, you know, the military, trains their people, you go through basic training, go through AIT, you go through all the training. Are there educational, opportunities that, new folks to these trades could, take advantage of? I don't want to say take advantage like in a negative way. Like,
oh, no,
just it's the great opportunities are there is what I mean.
No, absolutely. Most apprenticeships, I can speak from the pile drivers and the carpenter's apprenticeship. It's a 4-year long apprenticeship and it's earn as you learn. So you're already up from jump street. You're already earning a pension and an annuity and a wage. Your wage is based on the current journeyman wage. So you're going to classes 5 times a year, a week at a time, and you're also working in the field. And you're earning a wage, you're earning the benefits, you're getting the education. You can use your post 9/11 GI Bill. Okay. So it makes up for the difference. So like, let's, for example, first year apprentice is 60% of journeyman. You're getting 100% of the post 9/11 GI Bill.
Okay.
And it depends on the area. So let's say the DC area is like $2,500. And then, as you go to second, the GI Bill drops, and then third, fourth. So it keeps you at, that journeyman level.
Okay.
And, which is great. So, but you're getting education. You're learning all about your trade. You're in the field with a signatory contractor, this union contractor, getting your time out in the field, working full time, overtime. And then at the other end, you come out with your as a journeyman. Mm-hmm. And then we have journeyman upgrade classes. And as we cover any class that's needed in the industry, we cover it. So any follow-up training that, as long as the member is a member in good standing, you can attend it. All the training is free of charge, including the apprenticeship is free of charge. So the money comes as a contribution from our contractors that pay for the school. But the to the individual going through the training and working it, it didn't cost them anything. So
that's great, because I know a lot of people coming out of the military, the thought of going to sit through 4 years of college or whatever to get their degree is just not really appealing to them.
It wasn't appealing to me.
It's for a lot of people, you know. It really is. It's a lot of work, and trying to work a full-time job and earn a living while going to school is difficult.
Right.
And you're doing that. It's not just like you're doing that for a month or two and it's just, you know, you got to deal with it. And when you get through, you're done. It's 4 years, and that's a lot to do. And especially if you already have a family and, you know, you got bills and everything else, mm-hmm. like anyone else has, it's not like you're 18-year-old kid going to college who has not a care in the world, you know,
right.
other than going to class. It's a totally different thing. So, you know, this, it seems to me like a great opportunity for people who are looking to start that next career after leaving the military,
absolutely.
Right? And you're getting paid as you're training, mm-hmm. and you're able to kind of have the best of both worlds, it seems like. Now, what about the people who, okay, let's say they've gone through, you know, all the training, they've worked for a few years, and they have this entrepreneurial mindset, and they want to maybe branch off and start their own business. Is there a good path for somebody like that who can kind of go in that direction as well?
Absolutely. You're talking about like they came in as a carpenter and then they want to start a drywall business? Or
sure.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So we educate, small companies are that's the American dream, right? Be able to to start your own business and do your own thing. And we fully support that. We help small and large companies that are signatory to us alike to be successful in, and through training, walk them through the steps. Because the hard part is, it's easy to say, I want to make a business. You know, I want to start a business. The hard part is, what do I do now? How do I bid? How do I take my company that has 5 to take it to 30? You know, those, you know, what is the next step? So we bring individuals that are in, have smaller companies and bring them around larger companies. We make the connections. We do the introductions. We introduce the subs to the GCs. I guess the best way to put what I do now is I make opportunity. I build opportunity, you know, so I create opportunity for members and workers. I create opportunity for companies, you know, to be successful. And when you have a healthy economy like that, you have people going to work and they're making a good livable wage, and you have companies bidding money, it's a happy world. Everybody's making money. When everybody's making money, that's, everything works out well. So but going back to your original point, we help out our members that want to start companies. I mean, we like that. So
yeah, and that's great too, because some people, maybe even the people that I was talking about before, where maybe they've done this for a few years and they're mm-hmm. realizing that maybe the military took a bigger toll on their bodies than they originally thought. And maybe it's just something that they're like, you know what, I would rather be more on the business side of things. And, they know the business enough because they've gone through all the training, and not to say that they can't do, the physical work, at some point if necessary, but, maybe they'd rather be out there, you know, bidding on jobs and, you know, doing the business side of things as opposed to the day to day on the boots on the ground kind of stuff. Right.
Well, especially, I mean, if you're a disabled veteran business owned company, mm-hmm. I mean, there's federal contracts that are just sitting there waiting for you to grab.
That's right. So, yeah. And that just makes a ton of sense. Like, you know, if you can get those opportunities, you know, mm-hmm. based on that, why wouldn't you, you know,
right.
just take advantage of that, because you've earned it, really. I think, a lot of people don't put enough weight into, the stuff that you've earned through your military service, whether it's even things like the GI Bill, people just, you know, they may not really understand that, hey, this is a benefit that's available to you. Take it, use it, and get your, it doesn't have to be used for college either. Like you were saying, you can use that for, you know, some, you know, other kind of technical training or trades or anything like that.
No, and it's funny because you mentioned that. So like when I talk to, and I go out and I do TAP briefings and all that stuff, I talk to, you know, transitioning military members. Sure. and everything like that. And when I get them to us, the first thing I say is, okay, have you done your VA benefit? Have you done your VA? Have you done your disability? No. I was like, get it done.
Yeah.
It really depends on the post and your chain of command, but some people, they come out and they're squared away. And then some, they're just like, well, how do I file? Like it's, you know, so I walk them through the, what they can do to better themselves, not only, with our organization, but you know, on the military side, making sure they're doing the right thing because those benefits are afforded to them and they are, they earned it. They earned it. So, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, I feel bad that you earned it, dude. Go ahead. And file for it, you know?
And the other thing too, I hear this from people too, is that they feel like if they apply for whether it's disability benefits or any other kind of benefits that they've earned, they feel like they're taking away from somebody else who maybe deserves it more than them. Right. And that's totally not the case. I've had people on the show. I've even had the former Undersecretary of Benefits at the VA, mm-hmm. who explained the whole process. And as far as that funding goes, the funding will be there. It doesn't matter.
Right.
If you apply for it or somebody else applies for it, there's going to be funding for both people. So, you know, go apply for it and take those benefits that you've earned. You know, you're just really tying the hand behind your back if you don't. Like you're not taking full advantage of all the opportunities that you've earned. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of times people, you know, bitch and moan about how the military doesn't pay enough or, you know, all this, right? Yeah. Granted, you know, especially lower enlisted, you know, they're not getting paid all that much money. However, when they get out, there are so many opportunities financially for them that if they don't take advantage of it, well, then that's on them. You know, those things exist, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So, you know, I like talking about this because a lot of times I feel like when people are leaving the military, you said this before, they have this inflated sense of self-worth, like they're going to just start off at some, you know, executive level position because they had 20 years in the military. Well, you know, a lot of times people don't care about that as much, you know. I mean, yeah, the military service is probably important. They probably look favorably on that.
Yeah, of course.
I can't imagine that they're going to be like, oh my God, I'm never going to hire you because you're in the military, right? Like I don't think would happen. But a lot of times, especially, you know, people who, you know, rose up the ranks in the military, they get out thinking that they're going to get these higher level positions. Yeah. And sometimes they have to work, I mean, maybe not entry level, but somewhere, you know, somewhere a little bit above entry level.
You're gonna have to prove yourself. And like I said, if you're that good, you'll be fine. I mean, you go out and say, hey, I went to Ranger School. People are like, cool. What's that?
Yeah.
You know,
That's about as worth as much as someone saying that they were a Boy Scout when they were a kid. Like,
exactly.
It really doesn't matter too much, you know? you know, but I think this is a great path, I think, for a lot of people who they don't see college in their future. They don't want to go to college. That just not for them. Not to say that they're not smart enough or capable of learning, because clearly if you've been in the military, you've learned your job. You're certainly capable of learning. But some people just sitting in a classroom for 4 years is not their idea of a good time. Not to say that there's not going to be some education that you need to do for, you know, something in the trades, but there's a lot more, I think, on the job, hands-on learning available, you know, as far as those opportunities go, right?
No, yeah, and it's important. I mean, the infrastructure is the United States is what keeps everything moving.
Yeah.
The problem is people get pigeonholed. When people don't know what they want to do, they go to college, and then they end up on the other end with debt.
Yep.
And then they're driving an Uber. They went to go, you know, I mean, and it's for nothing that they went to school for, just because they couldn't do anything when they could be successful in a career that is very lucrative and has a pathway to being able to retire with dignity. So
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you know, it's good, honest work that they're doing. And you know, they can look back, you know, at the point of retirement and look back and be like, you know, I did some good stuff, you know, yep. including the military service, but also, you know, everything else that you did afterwards. And so,
yeah,
you know, I got to imagine it probably feels good if you worked on some construction project of some building that didn't exist, you know, prior, and you look over and it's like, hey, you know, I took part in that and I helped build that, you know?
Absolutely. I drive through DC and I'm like, oh, I did that. Or I was in the basement of that doing time. Yeah. So you see a lot of stuff and it's, you know, it's a sense of pride. So
it is. Yeah. Yeah. And that's stuff that will outlive you too. Like that, those mm-hmm. buildings will be there for years and years afterwards. And you had a part in that. And that's kind of cool. You know, I think back to, you know, some of the pictures from like I don't know if it's the 30s, 40s, whatever, like, you know, New York City skyscrapers, and you got the guys eating lunch up, you know, up there.
I love it.
And you know, you got those people up there and those buildings still are standing today, mm-hmm. you know, and it's like those are, you know, that was some good work, and they can look back and be kind of proud of it. They shaped the skyline of the city. Right. So, well, Mike, it's been a pleasure speaking with you today. I want to give you the opportunity to talk about kind of more about what you do and where people can go to find out more information about everything that you do, in case anyone is looking to kind of get involved with that or help out or get some help as far as their transition goes.
No, absolutely. So what I do now is, when I got done with my apprenticeship and I was working in the field as a journeyman. And then there was a job opening as the pile driver and diver representative for the union. So I applied for that, interviewed and got hired. And I did that for 4 years. And then this February, I got promoted to senior rep. So I cover the region for Washington, D.C., so everything south of Baltimore and all in Northern Virginia. I cover 7-8 reps and then 3,000, about 3,000 members in the area. So there's a lot of opportunity. That's nothing but opportunity, nothing but a bunch of work and education and learning. And we have our council, the Eastern Atlantic States Regional Council of Carpenters, is a very good council. Going back to the dive school that I was talking about, we just, we purchased it about a year or so ago. We're putting through our first diver class free of charge. Doesn't cost them anything. Cost me what to go. I use my post 9/11 bill. Cost me like $30,000 to go to dive school. Oh, individuals, wow. We're picking the some of the best individuals to go, and then putting them through the course for free. Once they get through the course, then they will go through the apprenticeship and be working as commercial diver apprentices. And you can't beat it. So your obligation is to, by going through the school, your obligation is to work, as a union diver and make good money. So that's mm-hmm. good obligation.
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
If anybody's interested in carpentry, pile drivers, anything, they can reach out directly to me.
Okay.
So I don't care where they're from, who they are. I can point them in the right direction anywhere in the United States. Yeah. Excellent. If an individual wants to better themselves and they live in the Pacific Northwest, I can get them hooked up in that direction. I can, our parent, organization is the UBC, United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners of America. We're all the United States and Canada. And okay. So we're a very large, one of the large, very, very large unions. So.
Excellent.
Right. You might've heard of it, but.
Yeah. And I think, you know, having that network of people, you know, across the country and even up into Canada, like you said, it just helps the availability of, you know, opportunities. So if you're not in the DC area, like you are, doesn't mean that there's not still construction projects going on all over the country. Oh, so
yeah, anywhere. So
exactly.
Yeah, but they, I mean, do you want to I can pass out my email address. I can give my number.
Well, you know, you can give me that information and I'll make sure to put all of that in the show notes for the folks that want to maybe reach out. I have your, I think your LinkedIn profile as well. I'll put that in there so they can reach out and connect on there. And, you know, so that way, you know, we can always, you know, keep that updated. And anyone wants to get in touch, you can just reach out through the links in the show notes. So before we wrap up, go ahead.
I would say it's an amazing path. It was a life changer for me. So, sure. And I want to share that with other veterans, because I think that there's a lot of people that could do very well. I mean, most people in the military can do very well in this field and make a lot of money and support a family and enjoy themselves, you know, that actually have a retirement on the other end. So,
yeah. And I think that's one of the biggest things is, you don't want to get out and just face like the rest of your life working a job that you hate and
yes.
you dread yeah. going. Yeah. You may be making some money doing it, but it's like, it just sucks the soul right out of you. It's like, yep. like, you know, find something that you enjoy. You know, I don't care what it is. Everybody's going to be different. Some people might be listening to this episode and think to themselves, no way do I want to work in that type of industry. Fine. Yep. That's not for you, but there's something out there for you. And I think the important message to get across is figure out what that is. Mm-hmm. And ideally figure that out sooner than later. So you're not constantly starting off at the ground floor. Right. You know, figure that out, but you know, you might have to do some soul searching to actually figure out what that path might be. But once when you do, make the connections, like you said, you have contacts, you know, across the country, you're able to, you know, put people in contact with, make connections with people in whatever the industry is. I don't care what mm-hmm. it is and figure out, you know, how do I get into this? What's mm-hmm. the best path? What educational opportunities are out there to kind of get me a step up, and use those opportunities, because when you have other people on the civilian side who maybe have to pay for those things out of pocket or figure out how to get loans and everything like that to get access to these things, we're dealing with military members who have access to GI Bill benefits. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of times that's going to cover, you know, a good portion of what you might need. And so, you know, that's a good opportunity right there. And that gives you that step up above everybody else. I think that's for the people who are thinking, oh, the military has this, you know, huge advantage. That is the advantage. I think you have that ability. And if you take advantage of that opportunity, you know, there's really nothing you can't do, if you want to.
Right. Right. Yep.
So. In a startling description, the UN food chief warned the world with the words knocking on famine's door. He called what we're facing a perfect storm of a perfect storm. And he's not alone. Barron's published that a food shortage could be coming even in the US. And farmers see it too. John Boyd Jr., a fourth generation farmer, told Fox News that we're going to see empty food shelves in the coming months. That's why getting survival food is more important than ever now. Create your own stockpile of the best-selling Four Patriots survival food kits. It's not ordinary food. We're talking good for 25 years super survival food. It's hand-packed in a family-owned facility in the USA, and it gives jobs to over 200 Americans. They have different delicious breakfast, lunch, and dinner options, and you can make these meals in less than 20 minutes. Just add boiling water, simmer, and serve. And right now, for the next few days, listeners of Drive On will get 10% off their first order at 4patriots.com by using code DRIVEON. Just go to 4patriots.com and use code DRIVEON to start your stockpile today. Awesome. Before we wrap up this episode, I always like to try to end episodes with a little bit of humor. And okay. I want to do a segment that I call, Is It Service Connected?
Okay.
It's a bit of a comedy kind of thing for okay. viewers and for yourself who maybe aren't familiar with it. Is It Service Connected? It's kind of like America's Funniest Home Videos, military okay. edition. So we look at some video of a service member doing something stupid. And we try to predict whether or not that would qualify for VA disability somewhere down okay. the line. It's kind awesome. Of just a little
yeah.
humor at the end of the episode. So I'm going to do that now. I'm just going to pull this up so that you can see it as well. And then we can chat about it. So right now okay. for the podcast listeners who are not watching the video, you can either go check it out on YouTube or Twitter or X, whatever they call it now. But if you don't have access to that, I'm going to pull it up on here. I'll try to describe it as best as I can. It looks like, I don't know, maybe Iraq or Afghanistan somewhere. We have, looks like the back of an MRAP opened up,
yep.
looks like two soldiers' heads peeping out of the top, maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
And let's see. Let's see what happens in this video.
Okay.
So right now it looks like the truck is moving and a couple soldiers kind of running alongside and one behind it. Now they're hopping in as the vehicle's moving. That's probably not a smart idea, but yeah. Okay. They got in okay. Oh, no, they got one, two that didn't get in. They're trying to get in. Now that thing's picking up speed too. And he's down. Oh. As he's trying to climb in the back, he flops right down on his face. And now he has to run and catch up again. But this time, they at least stopped the vehicle for him. So now he's able to get in. Oh, man.
Definitely disconnected.
I think so. I think he probably, he landed kind of hard, too. And that was on a moving vehicle, too. So I got to imagine there's something going on there.
Yeah, that's funny.
You know, maybe he had some knee pads or something like that might have braced the fall a little bit. But I think he the video's a little choppy. He might have hit his face on the ground too. So there's maybe some head injuries there. Who knows?
Probably his pride, though. His pride
for sure. The pride got damaged big time there. That one, man. Yeah, that would be embarrassing to watch afterwards.
Yeah.
Anyways, well, thank you again, Mike, for taking the time to join us and sharing, you know, everything that you do and your path from the military into your civilian career. I really do appreciate you taking that time to come on.
Well, I appreciate you having me. I really enjoy it. And like I said, if any of your listeners want to reach out, even if they just want an idea of a different path, I'm more than willing to, you know, they can get me on whatever you provide for me, LinkedIn, email, my phone. It's fine. So
excellent. All right. Well, thanks again.
All right, you take care.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On podcast. If you want to support the show, please check out Scott's book, Surviving Sun, on Amazon. All of the sales from that book go directly back into this podcast and work to help veterans in need. You can also follow the Drive On podcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts.